Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Knife is hanging every sleigh in every possible sleigh. Oh, my screams, never night as it screams, never fright as it screams.
Thank you. Thank you to our musical guest, the Cranscaries. Aren't they great, folks? All the way from Ireland. Yeah, funeral Pyreland. Welcome back to Rude Tales of Magic, the only podcast assembled in a factory by children. I'm your host with the ghost, the Grey Freaker, and I'll say it, I'm still chained to a magazine about guns from which I read this grisly tale. Today's spine-tingling episode of Rude Tales of Magic is brought to you by McDonald's. McDonald's, have you ever noticed there's way less bugs in the last 20 years than there used to be? That's because we're putting them in our cheeseburgers. Well, enjoy the episode!
Ah. Piss Harbor. Right where I left it. On a map. Just a little dot right now, but if I can only... Computer. Zoom in. Enhance. Almost. Computer, zoom in again. Enhance. Incredible. It's like I'm there walking the sleazy neon streets of Piss Harbor. Look at it shimmer. But be careful. Not all that glitters is gold. Sometimes it's platinum. A metal far more valuable than gold. And if you don't watch your back, it might get robbed right off of you. For as the city drops into the night, before the darkness, there's one moment of light, but oh, whoops, I missed it. Talked right over it. Butterfingers. Or, I suppose, butter tongue, due to the talking. We don't have a cold open for this one, so I'm just sort of stretching my narrator legs. Nice sometimes. Like getting upgraded to an exit row on a flight, so you don't have to worry about a completely bald man in wraparound sunglasses making a point of reclining into your knees for some reason. To what? Impress his wife? Buddy, she already hates you. This isn't gonna win her back. Oh, how the tall have suffered in our society. But you never hear them complain. Not even once. Saints. Closer to God for a reason. I think I'm beginning to understand that man with a big white beard and his mysterious ways.
The camera moves now across the skyline like the establishing shot in Polyester. And just like in Polyester, the helicopter crashed into a golf course in real life. But that footage was not included in the movie. Nor here. As we establish the skyline, you, the viewer, can't help but notice that one of the buildings is engulfed in flames. Why, it's the Logical Debate Coliseum. Oh no, what could have happened there? Perhaps the narrative will... Oh look! Over there in a more
residential part of town. It's the members of the main cast who were free tonight. They seem to be... Computer, zoom in. Enhance. Cast, tell me what we're looking at.
What are we looking at? Tommy, I'd say we're looking at least 2 trips with all this stuff. We can't carry it all at once.
Aw, damn. I was hoping to get this move done as quickly as possible, avoiding all the sentimentality that might come from going back and forth and back and forth from an old living situation to a new one. But I will say, if none of you want to help out, that's fine. I'm used to doing things on my own.
Shut up! We're all here to help you, and we insist upon seeing the job through.
Now come on, Tommy. You're not going to invite a centaur up here into your apartment and tell me that you don't need someone of my bulk and literal horsepower to get your stove, oven, refrigerator unit out of here and into your next rental apartment.
I'm glad you brought that up, because those things stay here. The new apartment has the refrigerator unit. The new apartment has the oven and stove.
Oh,
but we're moving the toilet.
I am glad you brought that up. The toilet is staying put. The new apartment will have its own toilet, its own porcelain hall of temptation and relief.
I've already destroyed the toilet.
You destroyed the current toilet.
It's, well, the current toilet is a hole.
Sleepy?
Yes. And there you see Tommy's roommate, Sleepy, step forward. He is a human man with a shock of red hair. He stands a completely uninspiring height, and he looks pathetic. Says,
not to worry. Tommy's always destroying the toilet.
Sleep.
With those ass blasts.
Yes.
All you laughing at me just because I got some problems with my tummy? This is why I like to stay alone. This is why I don't need people like you. Get on out there. I'll move on by myself. I'll take every last box down to the chariot I've hooked upon, hun, and I'll go back and forth as many times as I need to just to get out of your withering gazes, your mockeries, your laughters. Sleepy, take the toilet out of my safety deposit if it means so much to you.
Sleepy puts a hand out and touches your shoulder and says, remember what I told you about gentle ribbing?
Yeah, we zoom into Tommy's mind.
Sure.
We see a chalkboard, and we see a floating piece of chalk writing in real time.
Ribbon, like ribbiting, is just communicating affection.
We look and we see a young Tommy Whistle in the school seat observing the floating chalk, and then the Trunchbull right next to the chalk going, oh my God, he's alive!
We zoom out and Sleepy, you've said all of that out loud, and Sleepy is saying,
so just to understand, the inside of your brain, you're a little boy?
Yeah, I attend the school that Matilda attended.
And the Trunchbull from Matilda is present, shocked at the machinations of your brain.
Right, and now in that amazing scene, if you recall, the Trunchbull believes that the father of Miss Honey is back around, back from the dead, when in fact it is the mental power of Matilda herself, my classmate in my brain.
As I was saying, this is going to take 2 trips, Tommy, so we might want to start getting a go on. Like, you haven't even wrapped up any of these mugs in newspaper.
Oh, right. I always forgot. I wanted to make sure that you all had some tea or coffee as you were doing your service. Would any of you like something, or shall I pack these up right now?
Oh, my puppy dog is already on the case.
And we see that Ejika, who, by the way, is a talking enchanted sword with a dog, her dog has started shaking a pile of newspapers around a pile of mugs.
As the dog does that, one of the newspapers sort of blows past the camera slowly, and we can see the headline of it is Logical Debate Coliseum Burns Down.
All right, well, thank you, Ejika. Well, Moose, maybe you take these boxes of my leftover rope and my leftover hat. What else am I going to do? Jonathan, maybe you take these boxes of my sheet music?
Right, yeah, I'll take your boxes of sheet music.
There's a lot of sheet music in there, so it's going to be heavier than you think. Paper, when added to other paper, really packs quite a punch.
Are you sure you need the box of leftover rope?
I believe I will use it eventually. I don't like to throw much stuff away. I like to think that every little knickknack will eventually have a home and use.
Of course, and I hope that you're gonna have that piano that you've always wanted so you can finally play these years and years of time's worth of music that you've written.
Yeah, that's right. I did tell you that he looks in the distance. Can't play the piano.
But we still have to move this upright.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, please. Please do.
Okay.
Ejika's dog pads over to Tommy Whistle, and you see stuck to one of his paws is a headline about the Logical Debate Coliseum bursting into flames. The paw is, I'll say it, weirdly wet. The dog sits at Tommy's feet and wags his tail, panting.
Huh? What's this? Tommy reaches down and picks up the paper. Logical Debate Coliseum burnt down. Damn. I was hoping to see Christians fight other animals. And that's right, I said other. I believe Christians to be animals themselves.
Don't get him started.
Say, Tommy, says Moose, shutting down this riff. What about this painting of a bug? This sort of portrait of a bug. Are we keeping this?
Yeah, we're keeping it. But cover it up. I specifically like to turn that around so I'm not looking at that. So when I'm hanging up on the wall, I can only see the back of the painting.
Why don't you just put something else in the frame?
Because I need the memory. I need the memory of the awful things I've done to be near me but hidden from me. It's how I live. Don't judge me. I'm not going to judge y'all when I help you move out.
Tommy, you shouldn't be ashamed of the things you've done. It's a beautiful painting. It's wonderfully rendered.
Don't you see? I didn't paint it. I don't have that skill. I've never had that skill.
Oh.
All right.
I'll just put it down in Hun's chariot then.
Exactly.
And Moose, the dwarf, the suave dwarf of the group, heads downstairs.
Ejika the sword is actually propping the door open, so you're welcome.
You hear a crash. Ooh, ah, nuts. And then a slight jingle, and then a... Oh.
Centaur fingers.
As you hear a crash again. And Tommy, you see Jonathan Large picking up a box labeled Fine China and OK China. And he lifts it up and tries to put it on his horseback and then trot forward a step or two. And then it kind of falls off. It's not really balanced on anything except for bumpy horseback muscles.
Ah, boy. There was a time when I was so good at handling cargo, and I thought having these man hands would help, but I guess not. Say, what do you got in this box? Books? I wouldn't know. Can't read them. Can't read anything.
Yeah, well, it used to be China, but after your movement, I guess I won't be able to entertain anyone. Not that I want to entertain. I'm so lonely, you see.
Hey, that's all right. All you need to have entertainment is yourself and a nice meal. Don't matter what you eat it off of, even if it is books that are all named China. It was books in here, right?
Oh, brother.
And at that, you hear a voice from inside of all of your skulls calling to you.
Hey, guys, it's me, Maybelline Moonlight. I've got a medium-sized assignment for you tonight. Come meet me at the new Moonlight Value Bounties headquarters over in the guest bedroom at 512 Wellhung Road.
Maybelline, we'd love to, but we've actually got to help Tommy move before we pick up any bounties. We promised him, you know, as his friends, it's really our responsibility to help him out here.
That's right, we promised.
Wait.
This is a pre-recorded message, so I didn't hear whatever that riff was. See you soon!
Why is everything a riff to you people?
Piers, don't you see? 512 Wellhung Road? That's this building. And she didn't say apartment B3, but I bet you that's what she meant. Tommy walks to the guest bedroom and opens the door.
Before he gets a chance to, Moose comes back up the stairs. Now hold on a minute.
Huh?
Hold on a minute, Tommy. We are here to help you move. And I know that sometimes moving is a pain. It's an annoying process. It's a long, long day. But we cannot afford to get sidetracked, or it's just going to go on even longer. You can't procrastinate about this kind of thing, friend. We're going to get you settled. We're going to get you cozy in the new place. And then, yeah, we'll head back here and see what Maybelline wants. But I don't think we should just go off on little quests right now.
Tommy's heart beats heavily. It's almost as if he has a friend. But that can't be, because he doesn't. He's very lonely. He looks at Moose.
Thank you. You making the choice to avoid making money to help me complete my selfish deed? I appreciate it. I will return the favor one day.
Are we not getting paid for this?
I'm buying you a box of pizza, maybe some beers.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Hey, it's no big deal. After all, what are friends for?
I wouldn't know, but my coworkers are certainly going above and beyond today. They're for helping you move!
And Jonathan Large rears back up on his hind legs and uses his front legs to kick out the glass in a window, and he starts throwing boxes out into the street.
Let's go, double time!
Sleepy looks at the broken window and says, "Oh no, it's me against the elements again."
Sleepy, take it out of my deposit. Because you are my landlord.
I already did.
Sleepy owns the building.
I'm a landlord. Sorry, everyone.
Ejika's dog is scratching at the door to the guest bedroom.
Once again in your skulls, you hear,
"Hey guys, it's me, Maybelline Moonlight. I've got a medium-sized assignment for you tonight. Come meet me at the new Moonlight Value Bounties headquarters over at the guest bedroom at 512 Well Hung Road."
Tommy closes that door firmly and then locks it from the outside.
Ejika's large, pink, rabbit-like eye darts towards the direction of the door.
"This is a pre-recorded message, so I didn't hear whatever that riff was. See you soon."
She makes a lot of assumptions, but she doesn't know me.
Ejika unleashes a wave of purple psychic energy and envelops cartons and cartons of sheet music and flings them psychically out the window.
Ejika, even you are able to lift. This is unbelievable.
Tommy picks up a backpack full of like some personals and walks it downstairs to put into the chariot with Hun.
When Tommy walks outside, he hears a clopping above him and sees Jonathan Large leaping out of the apartment, holding Tommy's mattress over his head. And then he does a flip, so he lands on the mattress, and it feels okay for him to do that.
Hey, Chris?
Yeah?
First roll of the night. Can I have you make an athletics roll for that?
You know, when I said he'd make the flip, I knew that's when that roll was going to happen.
It was when you assumed. Chris, you've done the unthinkable. You've made an ass out of you and me.
But I've rolled a 19 on my 20-sided die.
Ah, well then, the ass is at the top of the back of my legs, isn't it? You land expertly, but not perfectly.
Oh, I gotta be careful doing that. Our horse's legs are so delicate. If anything ever happens to one of them, I must be destroyed. Do you understand me, Tommy?
A horse doctor in the bushes stands and he cocks a shotgun and he looks at you threateningly.
Yeah, that's why I flipped over the mattress, Doc. I'll see you next time.
Yeah, I'll see you then. And I'll be spraying you full of lead.
That's the man that's gonna kill me one day. Put me out of my misery. We have a thing.
He waves to the audience.
There's a smattering of polite applause.
My name is Horse Doctricus.
I make this vow. I will take him out before he does, and I'll be the one to set you down, to put you down, to ruin your existence, to kill you.
Holy shit, Tommy. That's so nice. Thank you.
Obliged.
I'm so glad you're going to kill me. That's, oh.
Only when you ask to be put down. Remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, so long as nothing ever happens to any of my four legs, we're fine.
And then he runs to go back up the stairs to get more stuff.
Upstairs, Moose is trying to wrestle a piece of newspaper out of Ejika's dog's mouth.
Hey, give me that. Hey, I need that. These mugs aren't going to wrap themselves.
When Moose successfully wrestles away the newspaper, he sees another headline from another local paper that says, "Wow, terrible blaze. Puts an end to that debate. Winky face."
Finally, I can wrap this mug.
Moose wraps the mug expertly.
Begging for a roll.
Okay. No, you know what? Tim, I think you've got a point there. Joe, let's have, it's a mug rolling. Let's have you roll a dexterity roll.
Great.
He said expertly, so that made me think it needed a roll.
You don't need to defend yourself, Tim.
I just want people to know.
Branson, that's an expert 12. An expert 12. You wrap the newspaper around the mug, and it is fine. Why, it's as if Branson Reese is moving.
Moose puts down the wrapped mug into the box of wrapped mugs and then looks to his left. There's... Oh. On an otherwise bare bookshelf, Moose sees one final dusty tome. He reaches down and picks it up, and with a big blow, he undusts.
Hey, is this some kind of yearbook?
I want to see, I want to see!
Frog school.
Oh, you don't want to look at that. That was me when I was a kid, and I guess I carry around for sentimental value, but maybe we should pack that one up.
No, look, and Moose is flipping through the pages. He's flipping through, and then he finds,
hey, look at this. Captain of the Space Club, Tommy Whistle. Why, this is no cowboy. This is a dang spaceman.
Well, I must admit I was enchanted by the idea of the stars, what happens beyond this universe. And maybe I learned a little about it and like to run little play sessions where we all pretend to be aliens or whatnot, rocketing around up there.
Tommy, if you ever really wanted to see the stars, I could show you. You need only grasp my hilt.
Now, Tommy, who are all these smiling young frogs who seem to be like shoulder to shoulder with you, in the prime of their youth, all enjoying each other's company?
Those were my classmates and club mates, and he becomes, his eyes go black. Peers.
Moose flips a few more pages. Oh, look, the varsity lacrosse team. Why, oh, there you are.
Yeah, I just, they liked me as a leader. My leadership, I will happen to be a captain of the lacrosse team. The defensive side, I liked having that big stick, and I liked bringing everyone together, and they respected me for that.
They posted the silly one, and you can tell these boys are having a grand old time. They're giving each other noogies, and Tommy seems to be right in the center of it, smiling broadly. All of them are physically touching him in one way or another, affectionately.
Moose, with the precision and clarity of a prosecutor, flips finally to the page of superlatives.
No.
Yes. Yes, Tommy. There's no getting around it. Moose looks most popular. Diana Buckles and Tommy Whistle.
I am.
Are you and Diana Buckles still in touch?
Well, of course, every once in a while back home, when I was back home, we would meet up and...
Give her a ring!
What?
Give her a little jingle jangle on the telephone.
Don't you see? I don't deserve happiness. I don't deserve marital bliss. I can't. I'm stuck around.
I didn't say propose. I said call her.
You said give her a ring.
Yes, on the telephone.
Oh.
Well, I also thought she meant make an honest woman of her.
Oh, stop it, Sleepy. You want every woman to be honest.
It's true. Women lie to me. Would it kill them to tell Sleepy the truth?
Sleepy, are you sure you're not just dreaming about that?
It's possible. I'm a landlord. I could hear the audience turning on me when I admitted that.
Hey, Tommy, do you need a landlord for your new place? Because we can fling Sleepy out the window, too, to come along with.
Nah. I've already got a new landlord. Don't need Sleepy. But thank you for... Actually, Sleepy, would you like to come along with us as we move around, just for old Tom's sake?
Well, I guess I could help you move from one building to the other.
It's the least I could do after you've saved my life.
You saved his life?
Yes. He saw me about to eat a poison sandwich.
And I stopped him. I ate the sandwich myself. Boy, that was a bad trip to the bathroom.
That's why I had to kill your toilet.
Right.
The toilet remembered.
Yeah, the toilet has... That's the reason why I'm moving, is because the toilet no longer respects me or provides me relief or will allow me to find relief with its manic claws and its chomping jaws and it's...
Isn't it beautiful? The riff has come full circle.
And I just have to say, now that we're done with the bathroom stuff, Tommy, I mean, by all accounts, it seems like you were a well-liked young man with many, dare I say, pals? Buds?
Moose, can you make a dexterity saving throw for me?
Yeah, yeah. As Moose says, friends? He rolls a 15.
A 15, okay. The yearbook stays in your hand as a strong breeze blows through the open window. And although it stays in your hand, it does knock loose a long centerfold. The kind of centerfold that like a python would jack off to in Snake Boy. And it's full of signatures saying like, have a good summer. We love you, Tommy. Do it for Tommy. The man of the school, seniors 06.
Look, give me the... Oh, rats.
What did it say?
It says our boy here is a man with many friends in this world.
Look, Tommy turns to face the empty wall, his hands behind his back, staring at the dusty spot where the old backwards painting used to lie. Look, you found out one of my dark secrets. Yes, I used to be popular. Yes, where I come from, people enjoy my company. Yes, where I come from, I even enjoyed their company. Yes, back where I come from, yeah, maybe I did have friends. Pierce Harbor ain't a place to be who you were. You all know that. Tommy turns around. All of you are different than who you were when you came here. You came here to reinvent yourself or to accept the self that you knew you were the whole time. When I moved here for a reason. Because I had to leave. I had to go and I had to never return. I had to embrace who Piss Harbor made me, who Piss Harbor wanted me to be, and who...
As Tommy talks, the door to the guest bedroom slowly opens, and Maybelline Moonlight just sort of sneaks from the guest bedroom to the bathroom.
The dog follows her in.
Ooh.
You hear from inside the bathroom, Maybelline Moonlight show,
hey, the bathroom, the toilet, it's been destroyed.
Tommy takes out his pistol and shoots the bathroom door, locking it from the outside.
Wait, that's like a trick shot to lock it with your gun. Make a charisma roll for that.
Okay. That's a nat 20.
Nat 20?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, you shoot a padlock out of your gun and it like swings around the handle of it, completely locking it.
I'm really glad we're getting good rolls when it counts.
Tommy, I had to leave a whole life behind. I get it. I know exactly what you're talking about. Hell, where I come from, they don't even know the name Moose.
What do they call you?
It's not important.
I want to know.
I don't want to get into it, really.
Come on, Moose.
I don't need to tell you about my whole life.
Probably something like Thamblerton.
What?
Probably like Thamblerton or like Ironbeard, you know, dwarf stuff.
I mean, that's a little reductive, but yes.
Yeah.
Fine. If you have to know, my name was Carnor Hardshield.
Carnor Hardshield?
Yes, that was my name under the mountain.
Wow.
That's crazy, man. I used to be a horse.
Exactly.
And my name wasn't always Edgica.
Really?
What? No way.
Oh, yes, I used to have a corporeal form.
Swords aren't corporeal?
Hey, why did you lock my dog in the bathroom?
Casualty of the moment.
Anyways, Tommy, my point is, I had friends there, and goddammit, he puts a hand on Tommy's shoulder. I have friends now. Friends so good, I'd even help him move.
When I meet that friend, I'll let him know that you also helped me move, your co-worker. Now, I'll appreciate that, and he will too. Say, all of us, maybe on this move we'll learn a little more about each other, about our past, about how we got to be who we are today, here at Here We Are.
I will say that I do respect the fact that Neil isn't laying it on thick by pretending to be your friend and helping you move.
No, Neil has taken the opportunity to do what they love to do, which is being one of the replacements.
Community theater!
Exactly.
Oh, we should support them.
Well, while you all have been looking at a yearbook, I got most of the stuff out the window.
And you can see out on the sidewalk that there is, it's just like a Pollock painting of furniture and clothing scattered across the street.
Oh, I suppose I don't have to hold the door open anymore.
And Edgica clatters to the ground.
Oh, Edgica, so you can move a little bit, huh?
I can sort of slide up and down surfaces, you know.
So, I've been meaning to ask, why did you, get rid of all your flesh?
Oh, I gave it up for something so much greater. You see, a flesh and bone body can only contain one soul, but a cursed sword...
Uh-huh.
Yes, but sorry, am I not going fast enough for you?
No, I'm actively listening, yeah.
Uh-huh, yes, okay.
Yeah, I've only got one soul.
Right! But I contain many. The souls of myself and those who have fallen at my blade.
Now, this is something I want to hear about on the road. We gotta get there fast because other NYU students are moving in and I don't want to get in their way.
Okay, but you have to let my dog out of the bathroom.
Sure, no problem. Tommy whistles.
And on the inside of the bathroom now, Maybelline is looking down at the ruined toilet and at the dog. She says,
okay, well... It's not ideal, but now that the dog's looking away, I guess I'll start by lighting a scented candle. Now to strike the match, a one and a two, and I know what to... Oh, no! My struck match is... Oh, no, it's caught! It's not just lighting the candle, it's lighting the entire inside of the bathroom. Oh, no! Oh, no, the door is aflame! Oh, no, the dog is running through it! I'll try to run through it! Oh, no, I'm stuck inside! Oh, looks like Maybelline Moonlight's blasting off again!
The dog scampers out, flames singeing the tip of its tail, and he grabs Edgica and runs down the stairs.
Outside, Tommy Whistle has picked up all of the loose boxes that Jonathan had thrown off, put them on that chariot, and then created an extra bridle to put on Jonathan so that Jonathan and Hun can pull this chariot along. He then gets on Hun's back and says, come on, everyone. Let's go to the new place.
Yay! Now this is a way I know how to handle cargo.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we're back. The group has decided to take a little break. Hey, after all, moving is one of the hardest and noblest things that a human can do. And by the way, when you wrap up a mug, like, casually, you're saving hundreds of dollars. Sure, the mug may break. All of your stuff will make it to LA shattered, but you save hundreds of dollars. In the long run, it's a really bad deal. But that won't stop me from putting my foot down every... Anyway, you guys have stopped in at a little cafe. Cafe Barbosa. You're grabbing a coffee, a chai tea latte, a cappuccino, a cold brew? I don't know. You guys are the players. I'm merely a narrator, describing what I see. And right now, what I see is something beautiful. Tell me what everyone's ordering.
You were right, I got a cold brew. Holy shit, he saw it!
Moose sips a beautiful horchata.
Bueno.
Edgica's dog is happily slurping down a puppuccino.
Tommy Whistle has a black coffee with a ham and cheese croissant on the side.
No wonder your toilets hate you.
Yeah. He's got shitting problems. Both self-made and curses.
okay.
Now, Tommy, when we go back for the second trip, we are going to have to pick up some more tape.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll pay you back for that if you end up going independently. I appreciate that. And for all this, I'll get you 2 boxes of pizza at the end of the day. And remember, all these coffees, these are on me, too.
Wow. What a great friend.
Peer.
Is peer the order of coffee that you'd like?
No. Just saying, making sure you've all been very kind today, but still we're peers. Remember, we've all moved here from different places, and actually, Jonathan, you were saying something, weren't you? About how you used to be a horse and such? There must be some different side of you before moving.
Begging the question. And at that, you see a human man with narrow little glasses. He's tipping his pork pie hat to you, good sir. He looks forward at all of you, and you see him. He stands up from his seat, and there's a brightly colored background as you just see him. He's like an anime villain introducing himself, and you see his name, Max Post Facto. He tips his cap to you. You've engaged in a logical fallacy. Tommy, it does 2 damage to you.
Ah! What? How did I take physical pain from some bullshit you said of me out of nowhere?
Because it's not bullshit. Logic and reason. Why, these are the rules that dictate all of reality. Who would we be if not for language?
Sorry, friend, we're not interested in church. We're actually on a moving break, so we can't really talk.
Well then, you've engaged in the fallacy of rushing a gentleman. And at that, Moose, you take 2 damage.
Oh, hey.
All debates take time. And by simply existing in the space next to me, you have consented to engaging in debate with me, Max Post Facto.
But you've engaged in the self-regard fallacy, because there seems to be nothing gentle about you.
He bats away your fallacy, and he says, you're trying to get me to engage in the false modesty fallacy. I haven't modesty, and so my modesty would be false were I to engage with it. Ha-ha! It flies back, and it hits you, doing 1 damage to your face, creating a small cut along your cheekbone.
Ah, ooh.
What the hell is this?
This? Ah, well, you have engaged in the dehumanization fallacy. And at that, Ejika, 2 damage is done to you. You feel a strange sensation rattling around in your eye. It's like as if you slept in a contact for like an hour. You just took a little nap. You didn't mean to hurt nobody, but now you woke up and your eye hurts.
Ugh.
Tommy makes eye contact with Jonathan Large, and then, maintaining that eye contact, he puts his hand on his revolver. Shall we?
Jonathan Large has been swinging his mace this entire time. The moment this guy said anything slightly shitty, he's now getting the permission from his friend. Jonathan Large unleashes all those many pounds of metal at the little creep Max Post Facto. Okay, I'm tired of your shit.
Yeah, make an attack roll on Max Post Facto.
Okay, pretty good. 16.
16. All right. Your mace swings down, and describe exactly what happens.
The spiked flail, mace, whatever you want to call it, it's a big, nasty ball of metal designed to crush bone. And it flies at him and just crushes right through the glasses, destroying nose cartilage, popping teeth out, blood spurting. The guy falls dead instantly on the table. It's very heavy.
That is exactly, Chris, what would have happened had he not, moments before the mace made contact with his face, whispered, ad hominem, shattering the mace. You have engaged in the ad hominem fallacy by engaging in physical combat with this man. His words seem to be imbued with a strange debate power that holds sway over the physical realm. He steps forward. He says, that's right, I'm Max Post Facto. And I burned down the logical debate coliseum. I assume you're the bounty hunter sent to collect the bounty on me. Well, prepare to lose a debate, a fate worse than death.
Branson, can Ejika glean anything from the energy signature of the attack that this man unleashed on her eye?
Yes, actually. Can you make an intelligence roll for me? Like an arcana roll?
Yes. That is an 18.
An 18. There is a cloud around this man that is like impenetrable. It's like a suit of steel-plated armor around this man that you can't totally see, but you can perceive. You are aware of it, although your sight doesn't necessarily pick it up, and you are able to discern that he has actually built armor for himself out of logic and reason. And this is an extremely time-consuming and socially draining form of magic that he's engaged in. Only by living a friendless life was he able to do this. But the power of having no friends has made him a force to be reckoned with. You realize that you are in the presence of a truly dangerous man.
Okay. Edgica takes all of this in and she just goes,
ugh. No thanks.
Hello, Adhom, my old friend. And he's going to fling the ad hominem fallacy at you, Edgica, for having the nerve to judge this man. What's your constitution score?
I have a plus 4, and it's an 18.
Okay. It's going to hit your blade, and you feel your blade just like rattle and shake. It's like a...
like a tuning fork.
Thank you. It's like a tuning fork.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Jonathan is weeping. He's weeping. His flail, his only possession, really, destroyed. Where's he gonna get another flail?
Where am I gonna get another flail?
Max post facto looks at you and he scoffs. He says, you seem upset.
I am.
As he says that, he hears the click of a gun. Of the safety being released from a gun, as Moose holds a pistol to the back of his head.
You engaged in the fallacy of turning away from me, friend. My only regret is, I wish you had just happened to be someone that Maybelline had hired us out on a bounty for, but I guess this will be a pro bono kill.
Moose, no, it won't work.
He's invincible. I don't know what a fallacy is.
I'm literally holding a gun to the back of his head. Unless his head is, like, made of metal. This historically does the job.
Yeah, Moose, you can do it. The one thing that can stop a debater is a straight shooter.
He turns around and he looks at you, Moose, and he puts the barrel of the gun in between his eyes, and he just looks at you unblinking. He says, do it, unless you lack the nerve.
Moose fires.
You fire, and the gun explodes. It's as if Bugs Bunny himself put his finger in the holster of the gun, and he stands forward. He walks forward out of the smoke ominously with his arms outstretched. He's in full Christ pose, and he says, you have engaged in the murderous fallacy. One of the direst fallacies of them all. And he puts his hand out, Moose, and you feel your trigger finger burning. It's as if you've dunked it into boiling water.
Oh, no! Thinking quickly, Moose instead dunks it into a horchata.
Ah, yes. I see I'm dealing with a debater of some repute. That works perfectly.
I've been known to have my way with a word. Pistols aren't the only thing in my arsenal.
Go for it, Moose. Stop him. With his debating skills, all he can do is obfuscate truth with pretty words. Use your straight shooting ways and your skill with tech and technique with words to stop him.
Get him to reveal what a fallacy is. I don't know.
He looks around and he says, do it, Moose. Do it. Try to dismantle me. Look at that. All of your friends cheering for you. Already you engage in the fallacy of popularity. And at that, he puts a hand out, Moose, and your hair is blown back. It's as if he's shooting wind at you.
Looking better than ever.
Wow, you look great.
Puts his hand down and the wind goes away. He doesn't look great. He looks like a fool to debate the likes of me.
Seems like you, my friend, are engaging in the fallacy of jealousy.
You have mistaken. This is not the fallacy of jealousy. There's no one I covet except for myself. And he puts his hands out and every window in the building shatters.
He's doing the fallacy of exploding windows. Am I doing it right?
No.
Oh.
There's nothing logically at faulty about exploding windows. It would happen because of what I did. And he begins to float off the ground. He says, my name is Max Post Facto, and there isn't a debate I can't win. Give me any point whatsoever, and I will argue it to completion.
Max Post Facto is the greatest debater in the world.
Easy.
I argue that point every single day. You've handed me my victory, you fool.
So Moose stands up, brushes gun off of him, and turns around. You agree with me?
Yes, of course I do. You assigned me... No. You assigned me the point.
What? No. What? No, what?
You assigned me...
No, that was the point I was arguing. That was the point I was arguing. If you're so great a debater, debate me on that topic.
Oh, that I'm not the greatest debater of all time.
Yes.
His laughter darkens as the sky, already nighttime, becomes even darker. Why, he's double-knighted it. I would be happy to. My pleasure. Of course I'm not the greatest debater who ever lived. I am simply the greatest debater who currently lives. We all know that in a timeline of infinite timelines, there must be greater debaters than me who will rise. Infinite debaters greater than me. I simply am the man of the moment. I am the now. And at that, every coffee in the building, it simply evaporates. He puts his hand up and it evaporates. All of it swirling around in a cloud of coffee. He opens his mouth and he sucks all of it up. He says, I'm more awake than ever.
So hold on.
Yes.
You're saying there's an infinite number of debaters greater than you.
Yes. And you, my friend, are none of them. And he opens his mouth and he shoots the coffee out at you. Moose, it's scalding, boiling hot, and it hits you in the face.
Can I dodge?
Yeah.
Cool.
That's what he's trying to... Look. I'm playing him, but I'm not him. I hate this fucking guy. He's trying to do this.
Branson, I want to thank you for saying that, because I get sometimes confused about... You don't condone him? That's good to know. Okay, we'll play along.
Tim, so do audiences.
Oh my god, oh my god. Should I be saying that I don't condone Ejika?
We'll put it on merch.
Okay.
Moose is standing near the counter, and he does have a good dexterity. Yeah. He's just grabbing cups and just like filling and like taking filling up the coffee as it flies at him.
I actually think this should be a charisma roll, though, because of...
I mean, don't threaten me with a good time, Branson.
Joe, you know, I want... Look, we love to see Joe win.
17?
17. You don't get all of it, and you do get a little burnt by the coffee, but almost all of it you've collected back in the cups. He looks at you and he says, well... He breaks a single bead of sweat. It's coffee-colored because of all the coffee he just drank.
As Moose, even with a little coffee splashed on him, giving him that little bit of rough-around-the-edges quality that he works with, baby, Moose puts down his final cup and says, but surely you must admit that if there is an infinite number of debaters that have lived or will ever live that are greater than you, at least one of them must be alive right now. If there's an infinite number... Surely at least one draws breath on this day.
He cackles and lightning crackles around him. Just sort of like static, ambient static electricity, like crackles all around him. People around him are dying, by the way, as he does this.
Yeah.
And he says, you have engaged in the most dangerous fallacy of them all.
The fallacy of the dreamer.
And at that, Moose, you are knocked backwards. You were just set tumbling, head over heels, just like cartwheeling backwards.
Whoa! But I'm not the only one!
Tommy, who has been hiding behind the coffee table, leaps up to Ejika and sidles up next to the dog.
Ejika is too powerful, but his power comes with his logic. You can maybe disorient him, you can drive him mad, and he won't be able to bite anymore.
Oh, you want him to pick me up?
Something like that.
I'll try.
The dog trots over, holding Ejika in his jaws, and he's wagging his tail. He goes up real friendly to Max.
Please. He scoffs. Please, don't make me laugh. What, are you trying to win me over with gifts of friendship? You're trying to... Oh, I see what's happening here. You're trying to surrender, aren't you? You're trying to offer me a gift. Well, don't worry. I won't take it. I've learned in my life of debating not to make friends, not to surround myself with loved ones who would help me move from one apartment to another, to put too fine a point on it. I know not to accept gifts, because all gifts are tainted. And he bats away
the dog, not hitting it. He would never hit a dog, even a man this evil. He just sort of waves the dog away. He says, off with you now. Go. Go. Off with you now. Please, please. Don't want to touch you. This is the Jester's Scepter fallacy. I won't be touching it.
The dog trots away dutifully, and Ejika just, like, if she could shrug, she would, and she says to Tommy, sorry, I tried.
Don't you see? I'm the best debater that ever lived, making me nigh invincible.
He's making too much sense. His way of dealing with the world, not connect to it. Debate. How do you stop debate? Wait a minute. Debate. It's just obfuscation of the truth. It's maneuvering things around that aren't true to win a fake argument. The only thing that can truly stop a debate is the truth.
No, Tommy. What are you doing here? This is nonsense. And a dark cloud sort of forms around him, and it just creates tunnel vision, so it's just the two of you. And he says, we don't need the truth here. We have logic. We have reason. Join me. And he begins to pull you towards him. Join me as my debate thrall. You'll never have to have another friend again. You can be lonely for the rest of your days as a practitioner of the vile art of debate.
Tommy looks at him in the eyes, and then Tommy's eyes go black as they did before when he heroically said the word peers rather than friends. But then, a glimmer of light gleaming off the toilet that has been opened because the bathroom was opened and all this in the coffee shop, and he remembers the people who had helped him this whole time. No. Take me out of this darkness. I'm going to tell you something, and I want them to hear it too.
Unorthodox, but I'll allow it. And he snaps, and the clouds dissipate. And you see in the bathroom, Sleepy is in there. He's sitting on the toilet. He's trying to, like, reach for the door. And he goes, oh, come on.
This man fears solitude for no good reason other than the fact that he's too scared to make friends. I ain't scared to make friends. I'm scared to make new ones. I'll tell you all the truth, and I'll tell him what it means to actually engage the people around you with authenticity.
In the distance, Moose rises up from a pile of rubble and looks off to his colleagues and says, he's doing it.
The dog has exited the building with Ejika.
Tommy hops over the counter, takes out an empty mug, pours himself a glass of dripped coffee, and takes a sip.
Tommy Whistle is a mask. A fragment of a mosaic already scavenged for its indigo tiles.
God.
A function of a theorem cribbed from a student undergrad who knew not what they devised.
What?
A walking mistake.
What? Wait, no. What are you doing?
Thomas Little was far from friendless. A loner by temperament, Thomas couldn't help but oppose his inner monastic side by being a collector of talents that drew him into community. Big community. His clear, unaffected voice rang out Bible verse so cleanly that church groups couldn't help but envelop him, willing, in their weekly study. An interest in knots sparked a comfort with rope. Local ranchers invited Thomas into their seasonal husbandry, and, if children gathered to gawk at the livestock, traditional lasso vaudevilles. Lacrosse also tempted him with its ability to combine sticks with pockets. But it was one talent in particular that most motivated his unnatural, though not unaffected, comfort with, quote-unquote, the friend group. And that talent was music. Young Thomas Little's parents first learned to relax their Presbyterian austerity when they found Thomas, whom they had thought lost in troublemaking for the last hour, glued to the side of the ragtime pianist in the local saloon. Drink, troublemaking, and cow vagrants be darned. If the boy loved ragtime, then they wouldn't stand in his way. With nary a single drop except for a sip of champagne at New Year's midnight, Thomas spent his childhood in the saloon, turning pages for the famous ragtime players who made their way through town. Hootin' Hammy Holler, Iketchiku Style, Maureen Saint Piano, all took Thomas under their wing and taught him to play. They didn't stop at technique, nor theory, nor feel. They also taught him to read a room. A saloon gathers scoundrels, sheriffs, and somethings, and Thomas learned how to score all of their little dramas and duels. Thomas could drop into a cowboy scene as easy as he could drop into the four-bar blues. Soon, ragtime players came from out of town to see Thomas. Whistling Thomas. Whistling Tommy Little. The ragtime wonder.
Max post facto is shaking, and he's like rocked by this. He says, "No, well, very well, but you'll never muse on friendship."
F off. The friends you make in a bar and the friends you make in a band always feel the most cinematic. Thomas had both under the same roof. A man about town and the townie staple all rolled into one. Thomas was helpful, patient, and social enough to connect the right people, and always one improvised song away from a party. It was during one of these numbers when his vocals were snatched away by the inspired Hera Violet, part-time bartender and singer. The two saw ease in each other and began to perform together. Soon they simply were together. So seamless were these two that their friends could nary notice a change after, always skilled with knots, they tied one.
Well, you've made a grave error here, you see. Your story takes no dark turn from here, and so I am the winner of the debate.
On the morning of Halloween...
No!
Hera warned Thomas not to ruin his appetite. That night, the saloon was throwing a huge Halloween party, and she was making maggot pie. Thomas obliged. He didn't eat all day. On a normal day, that would have left Thomas hungry, but on this particular day, after being surprisingly wrangled into a local rancher's emergency 5-hour knot contest, he was mind-alteringly famished. Thomas stumbled down the dusty streets, knowing he'd have to eat something before playing the holiday party. He practically fell through the double doors of the saloon and saw the back of the biggest fly he'd ever seen. He had waited too long. His tongue shot out like a rocket. In one bite, the person-sized fly was gobbled up. If a pin had dropped, you would have heard it.
Good Lord! No! No!
He begins to blink red like a video game boss.
While it may technically be an excuse, my wife was dressed like a fly for Halloween, so I didn't know I was eating her. It's not the fastest route to forgiveness. That was fine with Thomas. Why should he expect others to forgive him when he couldn't forgive himself? Broken brawn repaired, the comatose Thomas Whistle rode the back of a rancher's wagon for as far from home as possible. At the ivory gates of Piss Harbor, the rancher gave Thomas one final kindness, the clothes off his back. The rancher would travel home nude, which was his preference, and conveniently, his pleasure. Thomas was dressed in the garb of a character he had watched waltzing through his saloon all his life. He could drop into a cowboy scene as easy as he could the four-bar blues. What was left of Thomas Little departed with the gloriously, affirmingly naked rancher. It was Tommy Whistle, a creation, who entered Piss Harbor, and Tommy Whistle, now a legal entity, that registered with the DMV and G before releasing a roadrunner and buying a gun.
He begins to shake. He says, "No, no! All of the debate in the world, all of the logic, the reason, the fallacies, I...
He reaches a hand out to touch you. Tommy, he reaches a hand out. He says, we could have been brothers.
No, don't you see? The only thing that can stop debate is identity politics. Identity politics from an earnest place. That means an earnest story of one's life. And you were never capable of that, were you?
I wasn't! It's true!
And all of the skin peels from his body. He's flayed alive. All of the musculature disintegrates, and his skeleton reaches out to you, and with its dying breath, it says, "Nothing, because it's a skeleton," and it falls to the ground.
Tommy looks at the dust and the skeleton, and he looks around at his... What now?
Moose runs up.
What now?
Now you know the truth. Now you know the truth about me. About the mask I'll wear and why I can never be friends ever again.
Oh, Tommy, I'm so very confident you are not going to be able to eat any one of us.
Jonathan is crying, like tears streaming from underneath of his sunglasses. It seems as though he's quite touched by your tale, but as he moves, it's quite clear he's still weeping the loss of his chained flail.
Tommy, what you said today was powerful. You saved us all, but what if today, here and now, the three of us, and by extension Neil, all promised that we would never dress up as an insect?
You would make that promise? For me?
I would. I would do it for a friend.
A friend?
I would do it for the man who promised to kill me if one of my legs stops to work.
You would?
A friend, yes.
What about Edgiga? She ran away before my story, so never...
You see, you cut away, and you see Edgiga and the dog in line for a sold-out show of whatever play Neil is performing in that night.
If we extend to Neil, I guess we'll extend to her, too.
It's a Seussical. Neil is in Seussical.
Neil is Horton.
Neil is Horton. Oh, not a dry eye in the house.
Oh, the things you can think.
We cut now to Piss Harbor Grace Hospital. We're in the burn ward. Maybelline Moonlight, she's in a full body cast, but her free fingers are, she's punching her punch card in. If she gets one more, she gets a free skin graft. And all of you guys are crowded around her.
Hey guys, congratulations on defeating Max Post Facto.
I hated that guy. That's why I left. I knew if I slashed him, he'd be banging around in there forever, and you know, I can't stand that sort of person. I did miss whatever Tommy said, though.
That's all right. I guess my friends don't need to know everything about me.
Unfortunately, Max Post Facto was not the bounty I was going to assign you guys tonight.
Huh?
The bounty I was going to assign you was named Poop Bumblebee, and he was worth 30 gold. Good night, everybody.
Poop Bumblebee.
We iris up on 81 Real Long Terrace, apartment 3Q. Tommy is completely unpacked, and everyone sits around eating pizza from a box.
Well, friends, thanks for helping out, friends. You want any more pizza? We can order some more, friends, or maybe some wings, or if we need soda or anything like that. I mean, the party's just getting started, friends.
Shut up!
What the hell?
Sleepy opens the bathroom. He says, "Look what I found," and he's dressed as a fly.
Tommy's eyes go black.
That was Ali Fisher as Neil, Carly Minardo as Edgiga, Christopher Hastings as Jonathan Large, Joe Lepore as Moose, Tim Platt as Tommy Whistle, and Branson Reese as everything and everyone else. Rude Tales of Magic is produced by Bucket of Milk. Edited, sound designed, and scored by Michael Wolfe, with additional sound design from Michael Delphi. As always, special thanks to Tyler Button and Sydney and Benjamin Paul. See you next time on Rude Tales of Magic!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.